Gary Tim. Gary's involvement in the EAS and broadcast communities include, he is a member of the Society of Broadcast Engineers and a broadcast engineer at the Journal Broadcasting Group in Milwaukee for the past 34 years. He's been the broadcast chair of the Wisconsin EAS Committee for the past 14 years, as well as a Southeast Wisconsin chair for 26 years. He is vice chair of the Southeast Wisconsin Media Security and Reliability Council. He is co-chair of the Wisconsin Amber Alert Committee. Gary has served on the SBE Chapter 28 Executive Board. He received the 1996 Chapter 28 Broadcast Engineer of the Year Woolaman Award and was awarded a certificate of commendation for his work on EAS and Amber Alert by the governor of the state of Wisconsin in 2005. If you have an emergency, you want to be sitting next to this guy, let me tell you. Gary Tim.
Thanks. Thanks, Chuck. Well, let's see, we'll dive right into it here. We got about 45 minutes. I'm going to save the last 15 minutes for questions. I'll take about a half an hour to go through these things. The first 10 minutes, I'll just blow through the whole top part there. So we'll talk about Wisconsin's Amber Alert System, the broadcaster ID card program, updates to the state EAS plan. We have two brand new pages up on the Wisconsin EAS website. We'll talk about NWS Has Collect, the FCC DERS program, and an FCC disaster contact list that's new up on the FCC's site. And that'll be about the first 10 minutes. I'll spend the last 20 minutes on next generation EAS. Oh, and smiley face at the bottom there. We're handing out little green quarter sheets with all the URLs on it. So rather than trying to write 50 miles an hour, I thought I'd put those right in your hands so everybody gets them right. Wisconsin's Amber Alert, to date, we started back in April of 2003. We've had 14 Amber Alerts so far. To let you know how those are determined, requests are still averaging about 20% approval rates. So 4 out of 5 requests that we get for Amber Alerts are not honored. Only about 1 out of 5 actually turns into a real live Amber Alert. So I have to credit Wisconsin Department of Justice who makes that call. They've been very on the ball and very credible with the Amber Alerts we actually get. So we owe a great debt of gratitude to our partners at DOJ that they're controlling and that that it didn't spiral out of control like we were kind of a little fearful at the beginning. The actual Amber Alert annual meeting is tomorrow. We realize there have been some problems with the website as well as the fax and email system. Those are basically controlled by DOJ, so there's only so much they can do with their funding as well, but we're hoping to see an improvement in both of those aspects of the Amber Alert program. Wisconsin Broadcaster ID Card Program, and this is something that we instituted, myself and Michelle Vetterkind, after we went to the, and she's the president of WBA, after we went to the broadcasters EAS summit out in Washington, D.C., we heard from the Katrina broadcasters that one of the things that they needed was an ID card to cross county lines to be able to get to their transmitters. One of the biggest problems they had after Katrina is that the police were stopping them at roadblocks saying, I don't know who you are, you can't come in. So following their recommendation, Wisconsin is still, to our knowledge, the first state in the country to have a broadcaster ID card program. Again, this is the bullet points there specifically to be used by engineers to reach their transmitter site during a disaster, and it's specifically not for use by news gathering crews. And that was part of our arrangement with DOJ that restriction be put on there. And you see a sample of the card and then the text on the back saying that this person is proceeding to a transmitter site to keep a station on the air. And you'll notice at the bottom there, there's a phone number for any officer out in the field to call. That's answered 24 hours a day at DOJ. The cards are issued by Wisconsin DOJ. WBA administers the application paperwork. And I have to say a big thank you to Linda Bond, who takes care of that whole program, all the database, taking everything in, sending it back out, sending it over to DOJ, getting it back. So she's really the heart of making this program work. So I'd like to give her a big thanks. DOJ produces the ID cards and informs the police agencies of what they look like so they'll recognize them in the field. There's no cost to individual broadcasters. As we noted before, the card has a 24/7 number on the back. The cards, for those of you that have them, will note that there's no expiration, but they will be reviewed on an annual basis. For anybody from any of the other states that are here that doesn't yet have a program of this sort, you can come and visit the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association website. It's right out there on the home page, right up in the upper left corner. Currently, 112 cards have been issued to 41 entities. Who all has cards? Raise your hand. Let's see. Oh, excellent. It's great. Great. The Wisconsin State EAS plan. We've got a few updates that went up there in September. And before I forget, I want to thank another person, Jim Hermanson, who does a lot of help with putting things I send him up on the SBE website, which is our Wisconsin EAS website, and manipulating the crazy data and graphics I get him to make them look presentable. The main plan changes that just went up in September. The main reason that we updated at this point in time is that National Weather Service has changed the Lake Michigan codes for the mid-lake regions of the lake. Rather than big regions, they've chopped them up into smaller ones, which means new code numbers. So those are now in the plan. FCC's got a new homepage. The appendices, a few minor changes there at the WITI transmitter, and we updated the email addresses that are in the contact lists in the back. So if you go to the website there, just look for files with 0907 in the title name. That's the September 07 updates. While we're on the Wisconsin EAS aspects, we did get some answers on the RMTs that were missed recently up in Green Bay and La Crosse. I'll get an email out on those when I get back into town and back on my email more full-time. But those are both isolated and totally different connectivity problems at the two state relay stations in those two cities. But I'll get something out to you when I get back, probably on Friday, for you to staple to your EAS logs for those missing RMTs. Moving on to national programs, the National Weather Service has Collect program. And we've talked about it before, but just as a review, that will enable local emergency managers to log onto a FEMA website and send EAS messages through NOAA Weather Radio. Currently, that's expected to be online in fall. The Wisconsin has already established an oversight committee to review all alerts, and that committee is chaired by Rusty Capella from the Sullivan office, who represents all the offices in the state. That committee is currently producing a HazCollect guidebook for use by emergency managers in Wisconsin. We're planning on releasing that later this month. I'll be meeting with Rusty tomorrow. We are also attending the Wisconsin Emergency Managers Association meeting at the end of this month, where that documentation will be handed out to them so they're ready when HazCollect spins up. And the URL is there for that. Brand new that the FCC has just rolled out the Disaster Information Reporting System, or DIRS. This system will be activated in a disaster to aid the FCC in determining which stations need help. And again, this was another outgrowth of a lesson that the Commission learned in the post-Katrina days, when they had no idea what stations were on the air, which ones were off, who needed fuel. The stations had no idea who to call to get fuel and to get help. This will basically be a one-stop shop for anybody needing help. The way the system works is that all broadcasters should register on the DIRS site now. And I'll be sending out information on this again on all three Wisconsin SBE list servers. I just got the Wisconsin page up, Jim just got the page up recently, so I haven't had a chance to get an email out on that. I'll do that probably on Friday as well, just kind of encouraging everybody to go and register on DIRS. So you'll have this information in an upcoming email as well. But the way it works is all the broadcasters should go to the FCC's DIRS site now, register their contact information, and then you will be contacted by the FCC if DIRS is activated in your area. If DIRS is activated, then stations in that area will be requested to report their on-air, off-air status daily and any needs they have. So again, the Commission's being very proactive in reaching out to us. It's really good to see them learning the lessons of Katrina and actually putting programs into effect like this. So I put a specific page up on the Wisconsin EAS website with information on that. I did that more than just directing people to the FCC site, because there are some, we'll progress on here. There are a few things you need to know. So I would suggest that people go to the Wisconsin site first, read the two-page guidance document that you'll find there on the Wisconsin site. Then I would suggest you go to the FCC's DIRS site and read their user's manual. There are still some errors that currently exist in the current FCC user's manual, and that's kind of why I put the Wisconsin page together. I've talked to the guy at the commission that runs that site. He's aware of the errors. You'll notice in an email I waited about 2 weeks to roll this out hoping they'd fix it. Well, they haven't, so we should just go ahead and start registering. The errors that are in the user's guide are in our guidance documents, so you'll know what to avoid. Be sure that you're using the production version of DIRS and not the beta site. They rolled out a beta site about 6 months ago. The URL is very similar to the real production site, so make sure you use the link that's on our Wisconsin page. The beta site looks exactly like the production site. You can't even tell you're on the beta site. So it's very important to make sure you're using the right URL. So anybody that's accessed the beta site in the past, make sure you use the new URL for the real site. New users have to sign up under their company name. The first user may pick a company ID, which is part of the form you fill out, which then all subsequent users must need to know to register. If no ID is filled out, it just stays the default. But if the first person to register fills in a number, everybody else at the company is going to need to know that number. So you might want to have a little order to who signs up first. So you got maybe somebody in corporate engineering that has a finger on what's going on there before everybody else jumps on. For anybody that did already register on the beta version, they are rolling those users over to the final production version now, but the password will not still be good. So if you go back to the production version, all your information will still be there if you're a beta user, but you will need a new password. And the last thing they made us aware of is that the FCC has put a lot of disaster contact information up on the Public Safety and Homeland Security website. And you'll notice here, I don't know if you can read it, but like Richard Lee there, his actual cell phone number is there. So they're really making an attempt to stay in contact with us. There's a 24/7 number down here, another 24/7 number up here. So again, the commission's really reaching out to us to try to help us, try to stay in contact. A place to go if you need STAs because you're operating under a disaster situation or whatever, but I just want to make people aware, and this is on your little sheet there as well, that all this contact information is out there for you to avail yourselves of. I copied this, and it immediately went into our BCP plan at Journal Broadcast, and it should be in yours as well. Let's talk about next generation EAS. The next generation EAS is actually the nomenclature that the commission put in their ruling. So they must have marketing people working with them now. They got their branding, their new system with buzzwords. The genesis here of the new FCC EAS rules on July 12, 2007, the FCC released new EAS rules, which will take effect 30 days after they are published in the Federal Register, which is kind of common for all EAS rules I think we're all familiar with. Well, recently they released an addendum or a correction to the rule saying that in addition to the 30 days, it's also going to be 60 days after the Congressional Review Act report is delivered to Congress. So all that really means to us is that it's just going to push the implementation date further down the calendar. So the actual rules that are written, it hasn't even been in the Federal Register yet, so the rules aren't even in effect yet. So it's going to be a while before the rules go into effect, and then it's another timeline before we actually have to buy anything, and we'll get into that a little later. The most important change is that the FCC is introducing CAP, or Common Alerting Protocol, into EAS. Important, the current EAS network will remain with CAP as a new delivery method. So your EAS box is going to stay. CAP will just be another input on one of the inputs on the back. So after your SR, LP1, and weather radio, you'll have another input that'll be inputting CAP messages. It's just another delivery method for the time being anyway. I could certainly see once CAP is deployed nationwide and becomes quite common, I could certainly see EAS going away somewhere down the road. But the initial rollout of CAP right now is just another way to get a message to you. The federal government is moving to CAP in all sorts of different fields. It's a new worldwide standard format for issuing alerts. CAP is a text message with the ability to attach audio and visual elements. HazCollect, which we just mentioned before, is a CAP-based. National Weather Service is also posting CAP messages on the website given there, which is, again, on your sheet. So if you want to see what a CAP message looks like, you can just go to that weather.gov/alerts, and you can actually see what a CAP alert looks like. And theoretically, if you got the software, you could be actually using those. That is still a beta site, so they don't intend for that site to be in use already for CAP alerting. And also, the alerts on there are in CAP version 1.0. The current version is 1.1. So it'll give you an idea, but it's not the full-blown thing. For information on CAP, the best site that we found is incident.com. That site is run by Art Botterell, who is basically the father of the CAP protocol. So you can't get a better source than that. And there's much more information there than you could ever possibly absorb. Now, I don't know how much of this you can read here, but this is a CAP message. A lot of people are wondering just, what is this CAP? What is it? All it is a text message that has information on each particular line so that when it comes into any particular computer or device, it'll know what's on each line and what to look for the information it's looking for. So the top line just says it's an XML message. The next line says it's CAP 1.1. And then from there down, it's just defining each field within a CAP message. So if you're a computer at a cellular phone company and you know that you want to put the actual alert message out there, you know you can go down to line 13, and here you're going to find the information that you need to put out to the cell customers on their SMS or whatever. So all it is a text document. And the only thing special about the text document is that everything is always in the same order, no matter where in the world this thing comes from. You'll notice, and I don't know how well you can read it, but you'll see that the event code is here, the location code is here, but for anybody that knows the EAS protocols, there's a couple things here missing. The originator code is not showing up here anywhere, and also the station ID code that's part of the EAS protocol is also not shown here. So one of the things that FEMA is going to have to do before we can all adopt CAP is FEMA is going to have to come up with what we're calling a CAP EAS profile, a profile to use CAP to send EAS messages. I think it sounds a lot like both the FCC and other agencies assumed that everything to send an EAS message was in the CAP protocol. But when you look through it closely, you can see not all the elements to build an EAS message are here. And this was even an example from the CAP protocol itself, and they say it's an EAS activation. So they were only kind of paying half attention to EAS when they developed the CAP protocol. But actually, CAP was only put together to be a standard alerting protocol. It wasn't meant really to dovetail with EAS. So now FEMA has a little cleanup work to do there, so that then once they decide what to do with the CAP protocol, then the equipment manufacturers are then able to build the equipment, and then we're finally able to buy it. So as you can see, this is going to be a long timeline. What are the advantages of CAP? It'll carry information conveyed in a current EAS alert plus much more. It can carry audio, graphics, maps, and text all in one alert. So the good part here is it's all in one package. It gets sent all as one chunk. So when the alert goes to a radio station, well, obviously they're not going to use the visual portion of it or any video, but they would use the audio. And when it goes to TV, they're going to pick out the Amber Alert pictures. The whole package goes to everybody, and then the user decides what part of that they want to use. Cell phone companies would probably maybe only use the little headline that says a tornado warning, Walworth County, and then from there on people can go and get more information. It's the same format no matter who issues it, a worldwide standard. And again, Canada is looking at adopting CAP, and they are adopting CAP as well as it looks like the U.S. is. So it's really bringing everybody together in the alerting community. It can be used not only for EAS, but other alerting methods, such as cellular phones, websites, billboards, anybody that wants to display it. Again, it's in the same format all the time. They always know they can go to line 44 and find whatever it is they want to display. And again, it's a text file with attachments, which can be distributed in a variety of means, which are yet to be determined for EAS. The three things mentioned there were mentioned in the FCC rules as possible ways to distribute CAP alerts: internet, satellite, and digital TV data. Some more advantages for broadcasters. TV stations will have a text output of the audio message, so they no longer will be limited to the generic EAS crawl. And you can applaud if you want. I think we've all been waiting for that for a long time. And again, that is just in where you saw in the lower end of the CAP message there. It's just the decoder going down and pulling that text out. And in theory, that text will agree with the audio message itself. So now TV stations will be able to crawl the actual audio that matches, or crawl the video that matches the audio, rather than just that generic message that's built out of the header. TV stations will get disaster maps, and obviously these two things would be good for radio as well if they can print out a hard copy immediately. In addition to the embedded audio file, manufacturers are also talking about including a text-to-speech converter, much as we're all familiar with on weather radio, and that would be built right into the CAP decoder. The headline there, the FCC and FEMA are now sharing EAS oversight. In 2006, a presidential executive order declared the Secretary of Homeland Security shall administer the EAS as a critical component of the public alert and warning system. So therefore, FEMA now has a more active role in EAS, and much in the new FCC rules depend on policies to be established by FEMA. And I know a lot of people that read the rules were a little shocked to see the FCC dumping all this in FEMA's lap, but they haven't really come right out and said it, but we're kind of thinking that this is basically where that came from, that it was a presidential order. And it makes sense from an emergency alerting standpoint that you've got one agency that's dealing with all the alerting means in the country, and EAS really is just a small part of that. So we as broadcasters are going to be dealing more directly with FEMA now. So furthering the timetable, once the EAS rules actually become rules, the 60 days after the congressional report, FEMA will then have the option of adopting the CAP protocol. Once they adopt the CAP protocol, then we will have 180 days to implement it. So I'm saying here that 180 days after adoption by FEMA means that all stations will be required to accept alerts in the CAP format. Also, CAP messages received from your state governor must be rebroadcast. These would include state-level alerts as well as geo-targeted local alerts. In addition, stations must be able to receive any new next-generation EAS networks. And again, these are networks that are mandated by FEMA. Internet, satellite, whatever it is they come up with, we would then be obligated to receive as a way to receive these CAP alerts. In analyzing these rules, it seems there's a lot of things that really need to be cleared up by FEMA, since they're the ones in charge of this program now. Will each broadcaster be required to have a CAP decoder? Again, going back to the last slide, it says stations will be required to accept alerts in CAP format. And there's been some discussion whether that means Can we decode them into EAS at the state level and then distribute them? The way I read the rules in a number of different places in the rules, to me it means every broadcaster needs to have a CAP decoder, and I think that's where we're going to end up. But we haven't really got a definitive word from that from the feds at this point. What equipment will be needed to receive the new next generation EAS networks? And as I mentioned before, the current CAP standard does not contain adequate guidance for EAS use. We'll need the FCC or FEMA guidance to implement CAP for EAS. So, I mean, all these things are things that they need to figure out before we can really go anywhere. And I have to say that FEMA is really running this program, and so far they've been very open to input. When you go to the SBE EAS website, there's an FAQ there, a full set of FAQ. All those answers, or the majority of those, came from Clay Freinwald, the chairman of our committee, going to FEMA and getting those answers out of FEMA. So it seems they're more than willing to talk to us about their vision for the future and also to take our input. So we really see them listening to us, taking our input, and we don't expect that they're just going to slam the door and go in their little room and come up with something that they walk out the door and we all look at each other and go, what the heck is this? So it really sounds uncharacteristically in the past of these things happening in secret. It sounds like they're really going to be taking input from us as a broadcast engineering community, NAB, and other organizations. So we're really hopeful that something usable and positive is going to come out of this system. How soon will these changes happen? FEMA is not expected to act on CAP for at least a year. We've heard that from numerous different sources, from numerous different places. So we're feeling that's pretty reliable. And really, by the time the standard comes out and manufacturers can make equipment, it's going to be that long anyway. The FEMA or FCC must establish the CAP profile I was talking about before the new equipment can be made. And then once that equipment is available, CAP alerts in a state will not happen until an FCC-approved state EAS plan exists that is going to set out how those alerts are going to be distributed in every given state. So in a way, we're kind of masters of our own fate, that we don't really have to submit a state plan with CAP in it until we're really ready to do it. So we have some control over that. And again, every one of the 50 states is going to have to figure out how in their particular state they're going to distribute CAP alerts, and then that's going to have to be in a revised EAS plan to the commission. Ways to stay up to date on the EAS rules. Again, this is the second of our new pages on the Wisconsin EAS website. We'll be keeping that updated, and there's already updates on there as far as what's happened so far. The EAS committee has already met and had a cursory meeting on just to start thinking about how we're going to start distributing, thinking about how we would distribute these alerts. But we'll be adding updates to that page, and I'll try to remember to put blurbs out on the SBE list servers as to when an update's been posted so people can keep up to date. And the other authoritative source is the SBE's EAS webpage, and we'll be putting updates there as well with things we learned from FEMA, answers to our many questions that we have. And then moving on to just some of the other rules that are in the new rules that were just released. Wireline video providers, namely AT&T UVerse and Verizon Fios, are now included in the EAS. And there was no timetable for them, so once that 60 days passes and those rules go into effect, they immediately have to start sending the presidential messages. XM Sirius, Dish, and DirecTV were already in EAS, but it was noted in there that they do not have to comply with the governor's message since they're a national service, not a local service. And there was another noteworthy thing is that the FCC and FEMA are to coordinate EAS training programs, and SBE is already talking with them about how we can be a part of that and foster that training. It's something we really think is needed. Will obviously be needed with the new next generation EAS as well as training for emergency management people. And the last part of the new rules is their further notice of proposed rulemaking, where The commission did not act on these four things. They're looking for more input on them. They're looking for input on improving alert delivery to non-English speakers, which CAP can do very well. It can indicate what language the alert is in. Approving alert delivery to those with a disability, and obviously you can see the text and audio capabilities of CAP would address that as well. Should the FCC mandate alerts from officials other than the governor? I don't know, I guess you can look at that from two sides, whether your mayor should be able to do a mandatory EAS alert. In the additional comments that always go with an RNO, at least two of the commissioners voiced an opinion that they thought this was a good idea. So we may very well see alerts coming from further down the food chain than even the governor. So if you have any opinions on that, you might want to file those with the commission. And they are also looking for information on more testing to verify EAS operation, particularly as it applies to now the CAP alerts, whether we need to do more closed circuit testing, end-to-end testing, you know, within network kind of testing. So these four things are still things that they're looking for comments on. The effects that the new rules will have on broadcasters, the state EAS committees will need to develop a new CAP delivery network. They'll need to work on assisting the governor with the ability to originate CAP alerts, and then the revised state EAS plans will have to be submitted to the commission. At every broadcaster, I'm saying we will most likely need a CAP decoder. And in discussions, there's a question whether, for instance, TFT already has a CAP decoder out there, which can feed any EAS unit, but obviously it's a generic CAP decoder, since the EAS standard hasn't yet been set for CAP. But there's a question whether manufacturers will be going with outboard CAP to EAS decoders and feed that into your decoder, or whether they'll be making a CAP / EAS box that's a brand new one that does the whole thing all in one box. In analyzing the way this works, we're thinking that the combination box probably makes the most sense in trying to identify the governor's priority message. If it's priority in CAP, what keeps it priority once it gets to the rear end of your EAS unit? Then all of a sudden it looks like just another EAS alert. So we're thinking things are going to transition to probably a combined box, but that remains to be seen. And again, what equipment we'll need at the broadcast stations to receive any new next generation EAS networks, which FEMA may or may not implement. And my last slide here is underscoring our relationship with emergency management, with HazCollect alerts emerging on the local level and the mandatory governor messages arriving on the state level, broadcasters' relationships with emergency management officials are more important than ever. So at the local level, again, I'm urging you to get to know your county emergency management officials. For those of you that are involved in MSRIC, hopefully you got to meet them at that point. You might want to make sure you touch base with your emergency managers on a regular basis and make sure that they're aware of what you're doing. And they're going to have these new capabilities of HazCollect, so you want to make sure that what they're sending is what you want to be getting. At the state level, WBA is making a conscious effort to also start interfacing more with emergency management. WBA is staffing a booth and co-sponsoring the Wisconsin Emergency Management Association's annual conference that's happening in Madison on October 31st. That grew specifically out of emergency management coming to Michelle and saying, would you like to co-sponsor our conference? And that gives us the eligibility to have a booth there that'll be a good visibility in front of all the emergency managers. And going along with that is that all the broadcasters are invited to come to this meeting, to this conference. So if you have time on October 31st to attend this, it would be really good presence for broadcasters to be there and be wearing your call letters on your front and your back so they'd see us there in visibility, so that they know that we're there and supporting them and we're there to see and be seen. And then, I think that would be a great thing. So WEMA.us is where there's information on that conference, and that's on your little sheet as well. That's all I've got. Is there a question or two?
In the future, if we do get a cap alert, is it going to overtake our equipment and be locked on for 10 minutes like an EAN? Or is it going to be like an alert for severe weather?
The EAN is still being delivered by EAS methods at this point, but I could see that moving to cap alerts eventually.
So it would overtake?
Well, an EAN is going to overtake our equipment no matter where it comes from, so the delivery method isn't really all that germane.
We have a comment from Linda.
Sorry. I just want to say on the broadcaster's ID, I've had to have a difficult conversation with the general manager who put in for broadcaster's ID and DOJ turned it down. So please, it's not a rubber stamp thing. So make sure from your stations that the person that you're getting the broadcaster's ID for does know how to turn the transmitter on and off and does know how to service the transmitter. Also, on the paperwork itself, it's been turned back, or it hasn't even gone to DOJ because I flagged it. It says specifically it has to be signed by the station owner or the general manager or someone of that nature. A program director will not work. A marketing manager definitely won't work. Or or promotions manager will not work. It has to be that because those go on file to the DOJ as well. And outside of that, the last thing I need to bring up about the broadcaster's ID is the DOJ is saying that at the end of a year, we will be sending something back out to the stations to verify that they know where those cards are and who has them. And if that person has been terminated or for whatever reason, we've got to have those cards back. It's not just a program that you get the card and we forget about you forever and ever. So keep in mind, know where those cards are, and hopefully we'll never have to activate them in a serious situation. But we want to keep this program as clean as possible. Thank you.
Thanks for being diligent, Linda. It took us quite a while to hammer out this agreement with DOJ, and all we need is one station to give it to a news person to get through a police line, and they find out about it, and the whole thing's right down the tubes. So I know it's really in the general manager's realm to watch this, but please be careful, and if you're aware of any misuse at your station, that it's gone to somebody that doesn't have a proper need to go to the transmitter to keep it on the air, please do something about that.
Any more questions? Back here.
In regards to contract engineers that cover a lot of different stations and different group owners, how is that going to be handled with the ID card?
How are you doing that, Linda? I know we had discussed that when we first started. I'll let the expert take it.
Unfortunately, you have to have a card for every station that you represent, and there has to be a form signed by that general manager or the station owner for every station that you're with. So I do know that there's a bunch of contract engineers that service multiple stations, but unfortunately, that's the rules.
So we kind of debated putting more than one on a card, but then if you stop working at one station, it's like, okay, do we reprint the card each time?
The WBA will be selling really thick wallets, so you can put them all in. Any other questions? Oh, we got some more.
Hey, Gary. I think I asked this once before. Is there a tie-in between digital EAS that the public broadcasters are asked to transmit on PID 911 on DTV and CAPS?
Digital EAS is a program that FEMA has launched under what they're calling IPAWS, the Integrated Public Alert and Warning System, which is one of the reasons that EAS was brought under that. IPAWS is FEMA's overall umbrella for alerting. One of the things along with EAS under IPAWS is DEAS, the digital EAS, which is sending the president's message out on the PBS digital picture signal from Washington, D.C. that goes out to all the public broadcasting TV affiliates. And at that point, it's put out on the DTV carrier, and that will be yet another way to get the president's message out once they start deploying the DTV receivers to receive that. So that is one of the programs that's within FEMA's purview as well as the EAS. DEAS messages are in CAP protocol. So they're pretty much doing everything in CAP protocol. So there's a possibility there that could turn around and we could end up getting those directly because they are already in a CAP protocol. So CAP is everywhere.
Any more questions? Oh, we have another one. You're not from Wisconsin. Is this an Illinois question?
I guess for those of us who are not from the land of cheddar, so to speak, south of the Cheddar Curtain, do you know if any other states have made arrangements with DOJ to be able to do this in their home states? And this also applies really for those of us who do cross over state lines, where some of us may be taking care of stations in other states, like we would come in from Illinois to take care of Wisconsin, vice versa.
Yeah, if you're working for a Wisconsin station, you should have a broadcaster ID card program from Wisconsin. You know, kind of like the South Beloit thing, and you know, where the transmitter's actually across the border kind of thing. But I mean, if you're working for, I mean, is that what you're asking?
Well, that's only half the question, though. Are you aware, or is Linda aware, of any other states that have done the same thing with DOJ?
No, we found two other somewhat similar programs when we were doing our research, and I want to say one was like South Carolina, and I think New Jersey somewhere. But they weren't exactly the same. Responding after a disaster, getting through police lines, that type of thing. I mean, curiously enough, the broadcasters that pushed this were the ones in the Gulf states. And to my knowledge, they don't even have it up and running yet. So we are blessed in Wisconsin with a very fabulous relationship with all of our state agencies. I mean, EAS dealing with ECB to maintain the network, dealing with DOJ for Amber Alerts is where it started out. And when we went to Susan Whitehorse and Jim Warren that run the Amber Alert program, I can ask Michelle how many words we got out. I think it was maybe half a dozen. We'd like to do a broadcaster ID card program so our engineers can get through to maintain the transmitters in an emergency. Okay, it's done. What do we have to do? Our relationship with our state government is just so great that, and National Weather Service and everybody we deal with, we are able to do so many things here that aren't done in other states. It's unbelievable. You go to Iowa, to Ohio, and they've got 20 different Amber Alert programs. All those big cities down there, nobody wants to talk to each other. So, and I know for a fact Illinois has a problem with IEMA. That IEMA, their emergency management agency, wants nothing to do with EAS. The governor refuses to sign the state EAS plan. I know Warren Scholes is just, I would say, pulling his hair out, but I guess he's past that. Can't do that anymore. But so, you know, our situation here is better than others. But you know, all I can say is, you know, if you can point them to our website. The MOU that we signed, the Memorandum of Understanding that we signed with DOJ is there. It's only 4 pages long. There's a one whole page on Wisconsin broadcasters shall do, DOJ shall do, and we both signed it. So we both know what we're responsible for carrying out. One of our responsibilities from WBA was to make sure that broadcasters are signing something in ink by the general manager, and that's why Linda's being so adamant that the general manager is signing something that says, this is not for news gathering people. I must get the card back when the person leaves my employ. And all of this stuff was part of the MOU that had to be there in order for DOJ to sign it. So, you know, it's hard, you know, I don't know what else you can do down there. Down there it would probably be the Illinois State Police that would be the agency to work with, and I don't know if they're any easier than AIMA, but yeah, I really feel for some states when you travel around and go to these EAS summits in Washington, D.C., and hear the sad, sad stories. It's you come back here and just thank your lucky stars. I know people thank me for the time I put into EAS, but without the agencies to work with that I'm able to work with here, it would just be impossible.
Okay. I was just going to mention that, Gary. I think the reason why we have the relationship we do in this state is because of you and the way you handle things at your level, and because of Michelle and because of Linda. We're very fortunate. Any more questions? Very good. Thank you, Gary.
Thanks.